Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. Anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you'd silence them out, it's not to disrupt the meeting, we'd appreciate it. If you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All righty, first up is item number three. This is discussion of possible action to approve the agenda for September the 18th, 2018. Mr. Whitten, do you have any changes to make today?
Oh, we have a ton, Mr. Chairman. Let's start on page two, item six, the consent agenda. We're asking to continue Roman numerals 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And we're just going to continue them to some future meeting as opposed to a specific meeting while the comptroller and the deputy district attorney work on a couple of provisions. Continuing on.
You're going to continue to the next meeting?
No. We don't know when yet.
Oh, okay.
Commissioner McGuffey. Continuing on, item 11, unfortunately, with deep regrets, Congressman Amade had a conflict and will not be able to be up here today. His office has called a couple of times to say they are keenly interested in getting up here at a, hopefully, a date soon in the future. I kind of look to the Deputy District Attorney here to help me on items 12, 14, and 15. I believe we're going to go ahead and hear these today, but not act, and that is because there are some documents that are still being worked out. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. We hope to be able to hear item 13, so that is the last of the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thanks, Pat.
What did you say about 13?
13 we're going to hear.
Oh.
All right. Well, is there a public comment?
Here. 13.
Is there a public comment regarding today's agenda? All right. We get a motion to approve with the changes that have been made.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for September 18th, 2018, with the noted changes being on item 6, consent agenda, that will continue items 3 through 9, no date disclosed at this time. We'll continue item 11, 12, 14, and 15. Is that correct?
We're going to hear 12, 14, and 15, but not we're not going to
take
an action.
Yeah, we will hear 12, 14, and 15, but we will not take any action. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's the motion.
Great. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved to second to approve today's agenda. If the change has been made, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along to item number four, discussion of possible action, approval of the minutes for August the 7th, 2018. Is there any public comment regarding the minutes of August the 7th? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve minutes for August 7th, 2018.
Second your motion.
Moved in second to approve the minutes for August the 7th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number five, discussion of possible action, approval of the minutes for August the 21st, 2018. Is there any public comment regarding the minutes of August the 21st? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for August 21st, 2018.
Second.
Moved and second to approve the minutes of August 21st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number six. This is the consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve the consent agenda with the items already noted for continuation.
Yes, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda, noting that items 6.3 through 9. Let's see. 11, 14, and 15 will be heard, but no action taken?
No, those are on the consent agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep.
Just items, Roman numeral 3 yep. through 9.
3 through 9. Okay, thank you.
Okay. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. All right, moving along now to item number 7. This is discussion only. We'll take no public comment. We'll take no action or public comment. We'll start off with the committee and staff reports. We'll start on the right-hand side of the building with Chief Deputy Tony Dosen of the Sheriff's Office.
Nothing to report, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Why don't we go with the project coordinator, Mike Northand.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mike Northand for the record. To start off with the big announcement, the 617, which will be the 2017 flood event insurance repair work, has been brought to a conclusion. I know we all wanted to see the backside of that project. It is fully complete with the repair and painting of this wall here in the courtroom. Brings it to a close. Very happy to report that. Next item is the traffic signal, USA Parkway and Electric, was installed, is operating as expected, in fact, a little better than expected. It was powered up on Saturday the 8th. There were some adjustments made during the 9th, and then at 4 o'clock in the morning on Monday the 10th, a bunch of us were out there to watch the whole wave of traffic come through, and it performed, like I say, at least at expectations. I was very happy to see it did not back up onto 80, and we did not make the news. Item number 3, we did complete an application for attachment to a couple of NV Energy poles, one back here behind the courthouse and one over behind Piper's Opera House. This will allow us to attach data cables to their poles to get from here, from the data center here over to Piper's Opera House. That is pending approval of an agreement, which I'm sure you guys will see be forthcoming. The application has been made and accepted. Last item is the car chargers. We had a universal car charger installed out here at the courthouse parking lot, so we're now able to accept Chevy Bolts and Priuses and Leafs and that kind of thing, in addition to the Tesla-specific charger that was out there. Last item, I'm sure most of you know, I've accepted a full-time position with Story County. I wanted to thank everybody for a great year of projects, and I look forward to serving the citizens of Story County for some time to come in the best way that I can. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for your report, Mike. Any questions for Mike?
Question.
Welcome aboard. All right, at the Story County Senior Citizen Center, Stacy Gilbert.
Good morning, Stacy Gilbert, for the record. We are starting planning right now for a strategic plan for Story County Senior Center and all senior centers. This will hopefully help us apply for more grant funding and go for foundation money. We are having a lasagna cook-off on Friday, October 5th at 6 o'clock if you guys want to come join us. And my transportation grant-funded program is finally up and running. We hired 2 weeks ago two people, so we have transportation free for all seniors 60 and over. So if you have any questions, feel free to call me at the Senior Center.
Great.
Any questions?
Any questions? Good. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Lasagna cook-off is always a gift.
Yeah. All right. The director of St. Mary's, Eric Perry. Okay, good. Thank you, Eric. Okay. Director, general manager of the library, community chess, Eric Schultz.
Good morning, Eric Schoen with Community Chest for the record. Just four updates for you. I think last time I was here, I talked about how the school district is being a really great fundamental partner, and we now have expanded our before and after school program down to Hillside, so that's up and running. As well, we are working with them on having a counselor in every school, at least one day a week, to partner with the school counselors there because they're often so busy with requirements that they don't always have a chance to follow up on some of the really important needs that students have and their families, and so we are now partnering with them on that effort too. This past Friday, we had our 6th annual statewide Thrive Conference, which is really a place for folks who define the work they do as public servants to come together and celebrate the work that we do. We had a couple of different education sessions. We unmasked 4 superheroes for the work they do. We'll have more on that, I think, later from somebody else here in the audience. It was a really, really great time. It was nice to see the community center full with people from all over Nevada, all the way down to Nye County and Fallon and Hawthorne and Carson City and Reno. And we've held it previously in Reno and Las Vegas and Silver Springs, and because we have the center space, we were able to hold it here. So it's nice to see everybody here. And I went to Cafe Del Rio afterwards, and it was full. And that told us in the future we need to make sure we get a heads up to all of the different eateries rather than just a shout out, which we did. But I think some of them were a little bit surprised by how many people came, so we'll try to do better on that next time. And last but not least, we have our annual Halloween show coming up on Friday, August 26th. It's the no-brainer, get it, zombie bash. Come on, guys. And it will feature Lydia Pence and Cold Blood, perfect name for a band, for a Halloween show. They'll be at Piper's from 8 to 10. Tickets are $35. You'll see posters starting to go up. You can go to our website for tickets, or Red Dog's also selling them, and we are as well. So love to have people come and support us. It supports our library and our Calvus programs. Any questions?
Oh, Raina, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Director over at Community Development, Gary Haynes?
Nothing today, thank you.
Oh, great. Director of the VCTC, Danny Dotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, just a couple of quick things. You know, when we fill the town up with a special event, we always see a few congested areas. With the new fairgrounds development and the growth in the events down there, we've seen the same thing. But we are working with Public Works to address some of those issues and put up the no parking signs in those congested areas and whatnot. But it's a good problem to have. It's one that we're aware of, and we are working through the issues. But again, overall, the event this last 2 weeks ago with the camel races was very successful, and the traffic patterns through with the train and the safety concerns with the traffic was almost flawless. Having the I Street was very beneficial to take egress out of the fairgrounds. With that, Mike mentioned the Black and Howell building is going to be a demo. Demo will start on that demolition. We need a safety issue there. We're going to be taking out the north wall, and hopefully we'll be able to do that this fall after street vibrations. And then finally, on October 18th, we're going to host at Piper's a merchants/resident workshop. Be somewhat event-focused, but we'll send out a surveys for the public to get their input, have those results to talk about, and work towards a 2019 calendar that's beneficial for everybody. That's all I have.
So on the Bell and Howell building, when you demo, I've already gotten a request through Collins. The gentleman that owns a merchandise store next door, he wants to do some work on his building while it's after it's excavated. I don't know if you're aware of that or if he's talked to you.
I am, Mr. McGuffey, and I think we'll have him work through Mike Northern on that, when they can get in there and how that's going to. You know, there's a plan. I'm going to let the professional contractors work through that. But we do understand that he wants to get there and do some weatherproofing and paint his building, which probably hasn't been done in a long time.
I'd been there, I was maybe a little over a year ago. He wanted just to look and see what we could do. And there's only room to just barely enough to squeeze through there.
Right.
So
right.
You can't get equipment or you can't have a kid with a shovel in there if you're going to do any digging.
Yeah, it's very much a safety issue. So that wall has to come down to make it safe for anybody to go on up.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. All right, over at Community Relations, hearing Evan.
Good morning, Sharon Evan for the record. Starting yesterday, Ophir Grade Road will be closed until further notice. We're beginning construction on the 5-mile waterline replacement project. So heavy equipment will be working in the area Monday through Friday, but every day during the week you're going to notice open trenches and areas that are not suitable for people going through that area. So please help us spread the word. That road is heavily traveled by off-road highway vehicles. Ames will be getting their project signage up this week, so that'll be posted on both sides. So just help us spread the word. We're going to put some notice out on social media. So we have a lot of people that come from other areas using that road as well. So
For those who don't know, would you explain where Ophir Grade is?
Ophir Grade is the road that goes out behind the NDOT yard there on South C Street. It goes all the way down into Washoe Valley. So that's Ophir Grade Road. On October 4th, from 5 to 7, we have our open house downstairs at the museum to showcase the completion of the mural. So if you're available that evening, join us for some snacks and drinks, and we're even going to have a little scavenger hunt to keep it interesting for people to take a look at the displays in there. We've held a couple of flu shot clinics with Nevada Health Centers. We've got two more coming up. October 17th, from 10 to 12, they'll be down in Mark Twain at the Community Center. That same day, October 17th, from 4:30 to 6, we're going to have them at the Highlands Fire Station. So first year we've tried it out there in the Highlands, not sure timing-wise, but we thought we'd do it at that time. We can catch some of the commuters. So we can adjust if it's successful in the future, but please help us spread the word on that. We've been really busy with grants, starting new grants, closing out projects, moving things forward. We've received notification that we received an emergency backup generator that we applied for the high school. So at our next meeting in October, we'll come to you guys for formal acceptance of that grant. So September is National Preparedness Month. It's a nationwide effort. Their theme this year is disasters happen, prepare now and learn how. As we see, there's disasters everywhere in this country. So it's a chance for people to kind of take a look at things, take a look at your insurance, see what it covers, know your policy, all that kind of good stuff. So for more information on that, you can visit ready.gov. And as Eric mentioned earlier, last Friday, Community Chest hosted the Thrive Conference. It was well attended. I was happy to be able to be there. And I'm happy to report that our own director of the Story County Senior Center, Stacy Gilbert, was awarded the Social Justice Superhero Award. So she got a cape and a nice plaque, and I'm very proud of the work that she's doing at the Senior Center. I think she's made a huge difference in the 2 years she's been there. So look forward to bigger and better things to come as we look to expand kind of the senior services that we have here in the county. As she mentioned, the strategic plan we have coming up, launching that. So we've got representatives from all areas of the county that have agreed to join us for that endeavor. So we look forward to getting that off the ground. That's all I have.
Perfect. Any questions for Sherry?
Yeah, thank you.
No, thank you for that, Sherry. Director of Emergency Management, Joe Curtis.
Thank you, Your Honor. Joe Curtis for the record. Just a couple things to remind you of. Sherry just mentioned that September is Preparedness Month, Emergency Preparedness Month, and October is Earthquake Awareness Month. Story County has once again registered and signed up for the Great Shakeout, which is a national event, actually, and Nevada is kind of a forefront person on that. But October 18th at 10:18 a.m., the county will participate in the earthquake exercise, which is basically to find shelter within your office space at that particular time. The exercise takes you about 5 to 10 minutes to participate in. And I'm always tickled with, I usually go through the courthouse and see who's doing what, and it's amazing. I find people under their desks, and I'm not sure if that's where they normally are or not, but but they are there. They seem to be participating in the finding shelter and care in their offices. Also, October 6th, we have a Story County Quarterly Hazardous Materials Exercise, which will be held at Aqua Metals And we have been working with Aqua Metals to put this exercise on. And, of course, this is a quad county, four county, Carson Douglas Lyons Story exercise that would be hazardous materials oriented. The last thing would be that of the LEPC, the Local Emergency Planning Committee meeting, is on October 10th. And just a reminder, it'll be here in Virginia City at the Bank Building, and we would certainly invite any of you commissioners to participate or to attend and see what we're talking about and doing there other than just drinking coffee and having treats, you know. So I think that's about it, unless anybody has any questions for me.
Then will there be coffee there?
Yes, sir, they will be. We'll get a special cup for you. Any other questions?
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
All right, Fire Department, Chief Nevin.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Jeff Nevin. Just one thing, wanted to clarify. As I'm sure you've all heard, we had a fire in the industrial park two Saturdays ago on the 8th during the camel race at the same time. Didn't have any effect on that, but it was a busy time for the fire district. The news outlets reported it being at 1,400 acres. After some revised mapping, more accurate mapping, we determined it to be just over 800 acres, so not quite as big as it was initially reported, but no problems, no threats to buildings. We were able to pretty much have it contained by the next morning, so and no impact to businesses that we're aware of. Any questions?
Any idea how was it off-roaders?
It was human cause, but still under investigation.
Yeah. So. I don't think there was any lightning that day.
No.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. All right. Fire Marshal Martin Acevedo.
Good morning. For the record, Martin Acevedo, Story County Fire Marshal. Only a couple things. We have two inspectors that are in Denver right now doing some training. We're continuing to upgrade our training with our inspectors because of all the building that we have going on, and that way we don't have to contract out to anybody else as special inspectors, or I mean, excuse me, third-party inspectors. Pete Renault is taking the electrical inspector course, which is a pretty tough course to take, and so he's doing that. I talked to him yesterday, and he's doing very well. And Ashley Mead is doing the plumbing and mechanical inspections. And she's doing very well on those, I could report. Again, I talked to her yesterday also. And that's all I have.
Any questions for Mark? Good.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you,
gentlemen. All righty. Freshwater, wastewater project coordinator, Mike Nevin.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Mike Nevin. Give you a little update on the three projects. First, I'm going to start with just some clarification. Terry had mentioned the fact that the Ophir grade will be closed for the duration of the project out there. Just to clarify, they're out there this week doing some prep work on the road. There are some corners that needed to be widened. The road, if you've been out there of recent, is in pretty rough shape. So in order to maneuver the roadway, some cleanup work, grading work, watering, so to speak, has to be completed. They're awaiting the first delivery of pipe for that project. That first delivery is scheduled hopefully next week. We don't have a confirmation on that as of this morning, but they're anticipating that first load will arrive sometime next week, and then you'll see them out there doing the excavating. The Ophir Grade Road will be closed from the basically the water treatment plant to the top of the summit out there, which I call, there's a four corners up there, One road goes up to the top of Davison. The other road drops into Jumbo, and the other routes go to the 5 Mile Reservoir. So for fire emergency purposes, you know, it may be difficult at times. The best access is going to be through Gold Hill and up through the mine and in the backside there. That road is in pretty decent shape, and Ames is going to clean that up a bit too. So, you know, we have decent access to all areas up there. We're awaiting some signage that one of our local sign gentlemen is completing for Ames, and those signs will be erected and posted, also notifying the traveling public of the project out there, the circumstances surrounding the closure, as best we can describe it, you know. And so we'll hopefully have all bases covered, but they are out there, as Sherry mentioned, this week, and we do have the road closed, at least on this side, headed southwest out to Ophir. The project on the road, actually, the connection point is about 1.2 miles southwest of the water treatment plant, and to a point 2.5 miles out Ophir, where then it will parallel the existing water line. So we're talking, you know, a section of about 2.5 miles in length. But we do have to close it up at the summit, and that point is about 3.8 miles from town out that far. So it will have some impact, as Sherry mentioned, for the off-road enthusiast and people that are used to using that route. Walking shouldn't be an issue, but, you know, there again, just use caution and be careful out there.
Is there going to be a map generated?
Well, we're in the process of getting something up, Jack, on the social side. So, yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet. We were waiting for some contact numbers, so we'll get all that information out as well.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, moving right along, I'll go ahead and talk about the next project that we're involved with, and that's the package plant to replace the Gold Hill septic. We're in a regulation review, and that process can be tedious, as you well know. For some particular reason now, the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection has decided they probably needed to get US EPA involved. Got an email this morning from Samantha Strothinger from Far West, and she had a conversation with a gentleman that we were working with, Nathan, who's the water control engineer for NDEP, and he advised that the top administrators, be Jennifer Carr and Greg Libido, have been working with their staff to examine the findings that we presented at their request. So we don't have any particular drop-dead date when they're going to complete the review. As you know, with these agencies, that process can be tedious, time-consuming, and slow at best. But we just have to be patient and see what they come back with. I mean, you know, we're only talking a small package plant up to about 10,000 gallons a day. It's not like we're building some million GPD facility, so we're hanging tight, and you know, it does no good for us to keep bugging them, because it just, I think, slows the process. So we're being patient as we speak. Patient as we can be. Okay, the much larger project, probably the single most largest infrastructure public works project that's probably been undertaken, at least, you know, in the Virginia City Gold Hill divide areas. We're getting there. As of last Thursday, we're 100% complete by pipe. That includes the installation of 53,300 linear feet pipe, just a skidge over 10 miles, 243 manholes, and 435 sewer lateral connections. And, you know, keep in mind that this, of course, does not include those buildings on the west side of C Street from one end of town to the other, because they're, you know, on that C Street line that was done back in the mid-80s. So we were able to, with I think the last change order was number 8, through some savings in both contingent items on the original contract and with funds that were set aside in contingency, to complete both options A and B, as well as the core project. And, of course, we're done with everything that we can do, including the divide that falls into the Virginia City Wastewater Facility in Six Mile Canyon. So that's good news. Total contractor amount to date is $11,213,021.95. There's still some contingency remaining, and we have gotten USDA approval to utilize a portion of the contingency for some equipment that will be purchased for the Public Works Department. That includes new GPS equipment, including base stations, readers, logging information units, that sort of thing, for doing locates in future on the project. A trailer-mounted vacuum suction unit that'll be utilized to clean out lateral service connections and or manholes. Confined space equipment, which is a big thing. Some of these manholes are depth. The deepest one is about 28 feet, and that's the one on L and Washington. So that's important equipment to have. And then also some locating equipment. Jason has been working with Jennifer Heron at Far West, and so it's looking good that we'll have enough to assist with the purchase of this equipment from the remaining funds and contingency. What we don't have yet is there'll be some additional items from the archaeological monitoring firm, Broadbent. We don't have their final numbers yet. We hope to get those within the next month. And so some of those funds will go toward a portion of their contract with Far West. This week, you'll probably hear some jackhammering. You'll see a lot of the orange cones in miscellaneous spots. We've got the subcontractor back, Precision Manhole, doing manhole raising and concrete collaring around the manholes and some of the service laterals that are in paved surface roadways and driveways. The last couple of weeks, we've developed about 95% of the punch list that has to be completed before substantial. We've got a little portion on the divide left to do, and we hope as soon as they raise those manholes up there to get that schedule, that shouldn't take us any more than about a day to complete that. We've forwarded our findings to the contractor, Ames, and they are in the process of addressing the punch list items. We had about 2 pages of things that needed to be addressed before substantial. At this point, it appears that substantial completion will be about a month early. Initially scheduled for November 15th, we'll be about 30 days ahead. It's our hopes to put an agenda item at your second meeting in October to get board approval for substantial as required by USDA. And then a final should coincide right with substantial. generally, there's a 30-day window after approval of substantial before final payment. So, you know, those are just cleanup items that come with any large project. Let's see. I think I've covered all the bases. It's been an interesting, hair-pulling here and there once in a while. For the most part, just fantastic to work with all the team that has been assembled on the project. I mean, it couldn't have gone better in my mind. We did host Far West, and our group here put together a little luncheon, like a contractor appreciation luncheon. We did that last Wednesday here in the Slammer. I conned my wife into doing all the cooking for the event, so we had about 50 people or so, and it turned out real well, and it was just to say thank you to them. And we spoke a little bit, so I think it's important to do that because some of those folks have now been, you know, laid off because we don't need all the assistance now on all those crews around. So anyway, here if you have any questions.
No. That's right. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Mike, for the report.
Thank you.
All righty. Over at the Planning Department, Kathy Canfield. Great. Thank you, Kathy. Over at the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. I have just two items for you. Last week, several of us went to a County Physical Officers Association convention in Gardnerville. They include county recorders, county treasurers, county clerks, and county comptrollers. A lot of what they do is pretty much concerned with the upcoming legislative session. We broke out into our groups, our necessary groups, and our group for the comptrollers really had a interesting session on my next topic, which is going to be Tyler, technologies and infrastructure. But as a result of all of that, two of Story County's finest are now sitting at the head table for the entire CFOA, which includes every county in the state. We have now the first vice president is now Jen Chapman, our county recorder, and of course our county clerk treasurer Vanessa Stevens is the treasurer for that group. So out of all of those counties and whatever, we've got staff of two of our finest. Which brings me to Tyler Technologies. In about 40 days, we're going to be on a new infrastructure, a new information infrastructure that is going to replace a very, very old infrastructure that we've had probably for the last 4 years, and it's going to take us into the cloud. Some say that I've been in that cloud for a long time, but this is about data. I'll tell you what, it's got horsepower. It's from green screen and function keys to point and click. So between now and pretty much that date of probably somewhere around October 25th, there's going to be a lot of training involved, a lot of departments involved. We've got sessions almost every afternoon in my office. They will continue through the other offices, and we have, that end user training is very, very significant for that. So, it's getting close, and we're almost in the fourth quarter. I hope it's not overtime. So, any questions?
Sounds good.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
Finally coming to the finish line.
All right. Director of Planning and Human Resources, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one thing. The monopine cellular telephone pine tree in the Highlands will get a satellite dish on it here about this week, about 6 foot in diameter. That is temporary. It is to connect the pine tree to Slide Mountain for whatever connection that does. And at that point, they'll be installing 5G and broadband antennas on the pine tree. Once that goes live, and the satellite dish will be replaced with fiber, and the tree will be connected to fiber somehow into the regional network. People have been calling me on the phone asking if they should convert over to AT&T. I tell them I would not recommend that at this point. You decide what you would want to do, but I would probably recommend we wait till the tree is live first. I just want folks to know that, that don't sign any 2-year contracts until they're comfortable that everything is okay. That is all I have. Thank you.
Great. So this the dish they're putting on there is just for basically set up. It won't be, they won't be flipping the switch so everybody can use it, or
it microwaves its way from Slide Mountain to the tower, and then that's the dish that will ultimately be fiber, and then that brings the signal into the tree, I guess you'll call it, or the antennas, and then from that point it's distributed throughout the neighborhood. So it's kind of like the main link connector. The tree to the infrastructure to the grid.
Could you please send me an email with those notes and so I can forward to the my neighbors?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know that AT&T has contracted with some guys that do that are retired from AT&T to do pole testing, so they have to go from Virginia City to the monopine and test all of these poles to make sure that they have the capability and capacity to hold the fiber that's going to go out to that monopine. So with AT&T, things move slow.
Yeah. Yeah. AT&T is moving fast.
Yeah, they're moving faster this time.
And they are considering this is a Net 1 certified type of tree, and I don't speak necessarily that language, but that means that this is an emergency management priority connection to that neighborhood, and that gives it priority with funding and getting the things moved along with the federal government. So that's an important term to have assigned.
Any update with anything for Virginia City from AT&T?
They are still moving forward on that. There hasn't been any new movement other than what they're doing at headquarters as far as preparing a special use permit application for a water tower design. Okay. And we believe that'll be between 65 feet and 95 feet in height.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Austin. Okay. Chief Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Lewis.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Keith. County Manager, Mr. Whitley.
The only thing I'd like to just echo and reemphasize what Mike mentioned on the big project, and that is, you know, the team has been ideal. And just when I kind of go through again some names, corporate names mostly, but also internal staff. Far West is always there for us, always has been. They do great. We work with a lot of construction companies. I've never worked with one like Ames. I guess I'm just going to say it. You know, they build big boxes out there and come in from all over the country. But I got to tell you, Ames is an amazing company that always brings solutions there. And then internally, you know, I'd like to thank some very important people, Sherry in particular, who, you know, keeps us out of trouble knowing that this is a USDA grant, public works job, not in the terms of what I'm going to say next about public works, but prevailing wage, lots of detailed accounting, reporting, vouchering, and submittals, and she's just done a great job. And everybody from USDA and Far West in particular on the paperwork side of the house just love working with her. Public works as well. Jason's been to essentially every meeting and is always there taking advantage of any possible change that he can, putting more water shut-off valves in, working closely with the Ames team. Of course, USDA, who has a huge amount of money, both in terms of grants and low-subsidized loans wrapped up into this project. And last but not least, sometimes we get criticized for calling our retirees back into service, but I got to thank Mike tremendously. He's spearheaded this project and been the county's authorized representative from day one and actually clear back when we first started thinking about this project. So Mike, I think, thought he was going to come out of semi-retirement and work a little, and I've seen him out there every day on the job except for maybe one or two when he snuck up into the mountains to camp. So thank you, Mike. And it's been a great project. And that's all I have, sir.
Great. Thanks, Pat. Any questions for Pat?
No.
All right. Last but not least, County Clerk, was he today? Very good. All right, that concludes item 7, and now we'll move on to item number 8, which are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment on this. And I'll start to
Far left down here, Commissioner Gilman.
Nothing today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Lance. Commissioner McGuffey.
Nothing.
Thank you. All right. The only thing that I have, and of course this got by me at the last meeting, and I regret that, but want to make mention of the passing of longtime Highlands resident and two-term Story County District Attorney, that's Harold Swafford. He passed away after a short illness here just a couple of weeks ago. So we send our condolences out to his wife, Katie, and of course his boys, Ollie and William. Move on now to item number 9. Discussion only. This is Candace Wheeler with the Comstock Cemetery Foundation. An update on cemetery projects and other matters properly related. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioners. I will only take a few minutes. My name is Candace Wheeler. I'm the Executive Director for the Comstock Cemetery Foundation. We've been working up the hill for about 20 years now, and we happen to notice that occasionally, because we're in a small community, we might spend too much time maybe criticizing things that don't work or criticizing each other or maybe pointing out negative things. And perhaps because we work with the dead all the time, we decided that maybe we'd like to try and do positive things once in a while and take time to recognize those things. And today we're here to recognize and thank Sherry Nevin. Sherry is a county employee. And a couple months ago, we went and asked if she'd be willing to help us with a grant. It was the only way that we could get the grant. It was to put a public porch back on the visitor center and an exit stairway, because the door is like 5 feet off the ground. So it made it a little uncomfortable. Now, Sherry could have said no, and she probably thought of saying no, but she didn't. She agreed to help us. And even after things got a little dicey because there were staffing changes with the SHPO office, she still handled it very gracefully and professionally, and for us, with a good deal of humor, which went kind of a long way. So, Sherry, could you just come up for a second? We just have a couple things. We have a letter, a copy of a letter that was sent to the commissioners. It's from Bert, because he, too, thought you did a great job, and a certificate, and a present that we won't make you open now, but we found it at an auction and thought that you would really like it.
Oh,
and the best part is there's a huge plate of brownies in the reporter's office, at least there was an hour ago, and it's in honor of Sherry Nevin Day, so everyone's to help themselves and just take a moment to congratulate and think about something good. So thank you.
Candace is fantastic in knowing what to do and knowing the rules and regulations. So thank you for pulling one over on me.
Thank you.
Pretty good. Congratulations, Sherry.
Thank you, Sherry.
Next up, we have item 10. Discussion only. We'll take no action. The representatives from the 4th Ward School, St. Mary's Art Center, Community Chess, and Story County Senior Center provide an update on planning and marketing efforts on behalf of the Story County nonprofits. Stacy, you're the first one up there. You want to take the lead?
Sure. We don't have Laura here today. She had a scheduling conflict, so it's just us three. But it was last year, we got together with Jack and went out to try and started to work together as nonprofits. And we kind of took that one step forward or further and made our own little Virginia City nonprofit group. This is a small run of what we're trying to do. It's still in draft form. This is the best way to say it because we're still working on everything. So we wanted to present it to you guys as our nonprofits working together, trying to build a little alliance of what we have to offer. Did you have anything further?
Sure. And just to build on that, I think Stacy did a great job of providing the overview.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Oh, sure. For the record, again, Eric Schoen, Community Chest. We felt really honored to be chosen for that initial tour, and there were four of us, but we're also really cognizant that there are a lot of other great nonprofits in Virginia City that just can't build into a one-day tour. So how to tell that story? How to tell the story of this really beautiful aspect of Story County. So many great organizations doing great work. And so we really developed this after a series of conversations with each other. And I think the momentum just kind of carried us away and resulted in this draft brochure that could be used then to tell a common story about this great work that's being done here in Story County and Virginia City. And so we really meant this as a community of action, art, culture, history, and caring. And it's a way, I think, to follow up, Candace already left, but that idea of mutual support one another, for one another, we're stronger when we support one another and work together. And so we really are open to any kind of feedback and ideas. We've already gotten some feedback from Commissioner Gilman about maybe making sure we highlight Virginia City here on the front. And so that's why we only did an initial run, and we'll move forward from there.
That's a terrific idea.
I know you, anything more you wanted to try to say?
Just thank you to Joe Curtis for the fantastic four-wheeling and photograph.
Great. Any questions for the group?
No. I think it's great that you guys have taken the ball and running with it. So, good job.
That's great.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Next up is we're going to hear item 12. This will be discussion only. Consideration of possible approval of resolution 18-512. Approving the form of the financing agreement among the county, the TRI General Improvement District, and all owners of assessable property in Story County Special Assessment District number 01 in the Tolomino Industrial Center. As I mentioned before, we're not going to be approving anything today. We're just going to take discussion on it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I hold a pecuniary interest in the project that is the subject of item 12, and although there will be no action taken, I'll recuse from joining in on the discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner Miller.
If you'd like me to, I'll just explain why no action. It's pretty simple. When you have six major companies who I'm sure have more than one attorney, and then you've got the GID that has their attorney and attorneys and water rights attorneys, and what the heck, we have two attorneys ourselves working on it between Keith and bond counsel, and I can even make that three hands aware of what's going on. It's difficult to get uniform, consistent, and acceptable documents to the standards of all six of those companies primarily. So we missed the deadline, and we hopefully have everybody focused on this and stay focused, because while we have some flexible time to make sure we got this done before legislative deadlines and others, we really are burning that up pretty much. So with that, there's really nothing to, there's no presentations. We'll do that hopefully on the 2nd, I believe is our goal. Probably finalize it, I think, on this one. We have a couple. We've got some that will be approved, hopefully, or presented for approval on the 2nd, and then others will be presented and then discussed again on the 16th. Commissioner McGuffey, you're calling it by phone.
Right.
Okay. So that is all I'm going to say about that one. And the story is actually exactly the same for items 14 and 15 as well.
Thanks, Pat. So I'll look to legal counsel. We're not taking any action, but should we open this for public comment after your presentation?
Yes.
Okay. So at this time, we'll open it for public comment. Ms. Bard.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I'd like to read a statement into the record, please. I would like to once again ask that you not go forward with the conclusion of this process and approve the diverting of future TRI tax revenue from the general fund in order to fund and purchase a private pipeline, which will then be given to private parties. In the capitalist system, people and companies are free to promote their business ideas, invest their funds, and take the risk of failure for the possibility of future profits. The state of Nevada and Story County have already invested in future profits and tax revenues through the incentives and abatements given to many of the companies at TRI. One day, this investment will pay off big, just not today. I think that residents understand that the use of public funds for the incentives and abatements is a cost of doing business and are willing to do that in order to secure future county revenues. The expectation, however, is that once these companies are here, that they need to fund their own development and expansion. I don't think that residents are willing to continue to forego receiving needed services today or in the future for the sake of continuing to help big business. Our own C Street merchants use their own money and bear the full weight and risk as they run and expand their businesses. They don't ask for, nor do they expect, handouts from the county. Why would they approve of your handing out of public money to other businesses? In going door-to-door in our communities in the last several weeks, people are expressing concern and opposition to giving away our future revenues for these private companies when they see needs going unmet in their community. Why would they approve of your putting the needs of big business before their needs? Lockwood points to portions of their roads and easements that need repair. They point to I-80 on-ramp that needs reconfiguring, and they cite continuing water issues for some of its residents. Mark Twain needs flood and speeding mitigation on many of their roads. They need a couple of four-way stop signs, and they need some lighting for safety. The Highlands is still waiting for a community center. Virginia City residents are going to wait for their water and sewer bills to go back down, and they need flood mitigation on their roads to be done after this year's big dig. We have current and future needs in the county that are going unaddressed today while you think about giving away future revenues. $60 million of future revenues, $60 million of debt. You are thinking of giving away future revenues and taking on debt at a time when the abatements are still in force and at a time when we still have to pay Roger Norman 35% of TRI revenues in order to pay our $47 million infrastructure debt to him. While the economy is booming now, given how long it's been roaring, wouldn't it be more prudent to look at preserving our future revenue streams for the eventual and obligatory slowdown that always follows rapid growth? Now is not the time to take on more debt. The pipeline is needed by the six companies at TRI, and our residents understand that. Let us help those companies get the pipeline by selling the bond at the reduced cost for them and to finance it. Let's have them pay us back through the SAD. But that's it. Enough is enough. I've been able to collect 100 signatures, not working at it very hard, 100 signatures that oppose the handing out of public funds for this private enterprise, 9 signatures that are undecided, 0 signatures that support it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If we have 100 signatures, I will just call it like I see it. It's 100 signatures that in part were obtained based on misinformation. In the past probably 2 to 3 weeks, I don't think Mr. Gallagher and I have devoted as much time on the project as we have to correcting this information that's out there. I'm not going to debate this publicly, at least not today, since we're taking no action. But I will tell you, statements like, this is a private pipeline being given to private companies is patently false. This pipeline, at least in its current structure, is going to be built and then dedicated to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, GID, a recognized local government. So it is statements like that that just constantly are creating nothing but work. I just want the record to correct.
Okay. I will correct that. You're right.
Thank you, Ms. Park. Any other public comment? All right, then we'll go ahead and move on to item number 13, discussion of possible action, consideration of possible approval of an agreement between Story County and TRI Center, LLC, which is a TRI, by which should county have to utilize the uncommitted portion of its general fund to make payments on the bond secured by the Story County Special Assessment District, number 01, SAD, TRI agrees that the amounts so provided will be credited against the vouchers issued by county to reimburse TRI for the cost of providing public infrastructure at a rate of 1.5 to 1.
Mr. Chairman, once again, Lance Gilman here. And in as much as I hold a pecuniary interest in the property, which is the subject matter of this item, I'll recuse myself from discussion or voting on the items. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman.
And Mr. Loomis.
Mr. Chairman, Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. As you've described, there is some obligation on the part of the county to cover the payments on the bonds should the initial sources of revenue not be available. And that would require that the special assessment district payments be insufficient, that the revenue fund be insufficient, and there's a couple of other sources of repayment of the bonds. But the final source is the uncommitted balance of the county's general fund, which puts the county a little bit at risk here. It's fairly remote, but it's there. And so what this agreement does is it provides that if the county has to use its uncommitted general fund balance, that to the extent that we do, those funds will be credited against the vouchers owed to the TRI Center LLC at the rate of 1.5 to 1. So for each dollar uncommitted general fund balance that we utilize, we'll take off a dollar and a half from the amount owed on the vouchers. There is a provision that if we do get reimbursement through one source or another, that we will credit that reimbursement back to the vouchers. And there's also a provision that provides for the assignment of the right to collect the unpaid portions to Tri-Center LLC to then go out and attempt to collect it themselves. Initially, what we had provided was that we would have the signed agreement yesterday. That has not happened. Mr. Sater is here today, and he explains that Mr. Norman, who is the entity, he's the president of the entity, which is the general manager of the TRI LLC, is uncomfortable with the idea of signing the contract until he's assured that the SAD and the TIA will be created. And so those are not happening today. And so he's going to hold off on signing this document until such time as those are provided. And so what's before you today really is a consideration of the unsigned agreement. I think your options are to either approve it, conditionally approve it, subject to Mr. Norman and his manager entity signing off on it, or continue it until another day. I don't know, Mr. Sater, if you have anything that you want to add to this.
I don't know.
Okay, it's also, it's my understanding that in this agreement, that not only would it be 1.5 to 1, that it would be front-loaded and it wouldn't come in at the end. It wouldn't come off the tail end of the debt. It would come off if whatever debt we were to pay that would be in the current year.
That's right.
That we would get the 150% reduction off of whatever we were to pay back TRI for that given year, which under these examples, possibly we could end up paying them nothing back and even end up with a greater credit than what would be owed TRI in a fiscal year.
That's true.
And if I may,
it doesn't say it's front-loaded in this, but the agreement would itself, the document to be signed by Mr. Norman would have that verbiage in it?
Well, we do have a provision in here that says, under paragraph 1C, we have a provision that says the amounts to be credited against the vouchers will be credited against the next payment due on the vouchers as determined by the formula set forth in the development agreement, which is where we're intending to have it front loaded.
All right. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I may add, subject to counsel's advice, I think the only thing I was disappointed to hear is that we don't have the agreement. It's been verbally extended. My response back probably to our counsel to provide back to Roger is to simply say at some point we're going to get to the chicken and the egg scenario here, because I would look at our comptroller as the two chief staffs that are either going to recommend this for approval or not. We will not recommend anything for approval unless this agreement is here and executed.
Okay. Do you have any questions, Jack?
No.
All right. How about we open it up for public comment? Hearing none. Okay, I'm going to recommend that we accept this conditional. You know, this would be approved condition to the signing of the document by Mr. Norman. Or do you want to continue? It's up to you, Jack. You know?
That's what I was thinking.
Well, I'm ready to settle it right now, but if you want to wait.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of continuing it, and that way this settlement should be nailed down. I'd hate to say we approve it on condition, and then the conditions aren't really met. That's my concern.
Well, it's just one thing less to deal with down the road.
Yeah. You okay with that?
Sure.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we continue this item to the October 2nd meeting in this courtroom at 10 a.m.
Is that when we plan on bringing these other items back for approval?
Yes.
So not the GIA.
Probably part of it will have to go wait until the 16th of October.
All right. So should we go to the 2nd or should we go to the 16th?
I think my recommendation is put it on for the 2nd. If things aren't ready to roll then, we can move it to the 16th.
Right. I agree.
Okay.
So you have my motion.
Okay. We have a motion to continue this item to October the 2nd. I'll second your motion. Then move the second to continue this item to October the 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was 13. 14, yeah.
All right, this item has also been scheduled to be continued, but we're going to go ahead and do discussion on this. On a second reading of Ordinance 18-289, creating Story County, Nevada, Special Assessment District 0, District Number 01, the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, ordering a water project within Story County, Nevada.
Mr. Chairman, once again, Lance Gilman, and in as much as I own a pecuniary interest in the property that's the subject of this action, I'll recuse myself from the discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman.
Pat? Pretty much the same presentation. There were certain core documents that needed to be agreed to. We're still working through that with all the participants. I can tell you our council is okay with the ordinance as it's drafted, but again, some of the interrelated documents that underpin this are still being discussed. So staff recommends continuing to October the 2nd, 10 o'clock here, and then we'll continue to work on it.
Very good. Okay. Well, we open up for public comment. Fair enough. If I get a motion to continue this to October the 2nd.
I'll make a motion to continue this to the October 2nd County Commissioner meeting here in this courtroom at 10 a.m.
All right. I'll second your motion. Move to second to continue item 14 to October the 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Moving along now to item number 15. This item is scheduled to be continued also. We'll take discussion on this. Second reading of Ordinance 18-290 concerning Story County, Nevada, Special Assessment District Number 01, Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, and assessing the cost of local improvements against accessible property benefited by the local improvements.
Same exact situation, Mr. Chairman. Again, the actual ordinance itself, the language, to the best of my knowledge, has not changed in its last presentation, but because key documents that are integrated into this and referenced are still being reviewed by all the councils and all the participants. So staff recommends continuing this item to the October 2nd meeting, 10 o'clock here at the courthouse.
Okay. So why should you need to do disclosure on 15 also?
I believe I should, yes. In the interest of caution on item number 15, Lance Gilman, as I hold a pecuniary interest in the property which is the subject of this action, I'll recuse myself from joining on any discussion.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Okay.
No public comment or anything?
Yeah. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I'd like to call for a motion.
Okay. I'll motion to continue this item to the October 2nd, 2018 meeting at 10 a.m. in this courtroom.
Right. I'll second your motion. Move the second to continue item 15 to October the 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. We'll move on now to item number 16. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. We'll welcome Commissioner Gilman back to the board. This is the Carson Water Subconservancy District, CWSD. Director Ed James to provide input and receive comments from the board Story County Commissions regarding CWSD submitting an amicus brief opposing the use of the public trust doctrine to be applied to water rights already adjudicated and settled under the doctrine in prior appropriation.
Good morning,
Mr. James.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Ed James for the Carson Water Subconservancy District. And today I'm going to talk about the public trust doctrine. I'm going to give you a little introduction to where we are, a little background, and then solicit comments if you have any. First, a little introduction. About 2 months ago, CWSD was asked to participate in an amicus brief regarding the public trust doctrine and the dealing with prior appropriation water rights. This issue was brought forward to my board at our August board meeting, and at that time, the board did opt to participate in submitting an amicus brief, but there were two guidelines given. One is for our attorney to come back with an estimate of cost to file this brief. And the other one, I was directed by my board to go to the different counties in the watershed to talk about this and provide back any comments that different counties may have regarding this. So that is what I'm here today. I am not giving you a legal opinion. I don't play attorney. I'm just going to give you basically an understanding of the public trust doctrine and my interpretation of the impact it could have on Nevada water law. So a little background of currently. Currently, this case is being heard before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and to looking at dealing with a minimum stream flow into Walker Lake. The Ninth Circuit was listening to it, and they asked the Nevada Supreme Court two questions that they want for the Nevada Supreme Court to consider. Question one, does the public trust doctrine apply to rights already adjudicated and settled under the doctrine of prior appropriation, and if so, to what extent? Question two, if the public trust doctrine applies and allows the reallocation of rights settled under the doctrine of prior appropriation, does the apparition of such adjudication or vested rights constitute a takings under the Nevada Constitution requiring payment of just compensation? So those are the two questions that are now before the Nevada Supreme Court. So a little background. Several years ago, and I think this started back in probably the 1990s, Mineral County and a Walker Lake working group filed a lawsuit to intervene into the Walker River Decree to recognize a minimum stream flow of 127,000 acre feet to flow into Walker Lake using the public trust doctrine. Mineral County has claimed that the Walker Lake is held in trust by the state of Nevada pursuant to the Nevada Public Trust Doctrine, and the decree should be amended to adjust the prior appropriations of water rights on the Walker watershed. So what is this talking about? In public trust doctrine. And public trust doctrine has been around for a long time. People go back to even the Romans or even in England when he had a king. And basically, a public trust is holding land on behalf of the public.
This has been used throughout the United States. It's very recognized law. Typically, it's used with land that the government, local states, have through a public trust doctrine to preserve land on behalf of the people in that state. The public trust doctrine has been recognized in Nevada, and so there is a public trust doctrine, again, recognizing lands. The famous case in Nevada is Lawrence versus Clark County on some land associated with that. Rarely has the public trust doctrine been used regarding water right allocations. However, there is a famous one on Mono Lake, if you're familiar with that. Well, L.A. was taking water out of Mono Lake. The Mono Lake was actually dropping, being impacted, and there was a file in the California Supreme Court using the public trust doctrine to bring water back into Mono Lake. That was given. The courts of California looked at it and basically says, looking at water rights and prior appropriations, that they should be considered on equal footing. Consideration should be given to the public trust on the protection of Mono Lake. And because of that, they said LA had other alternatives, even though they may be more expensive. They were actually precluded from using some of their water rights, and that water right was to fill back Mono Lake to a certain level. The one thing that's important in that case is they did not say that the public trust trumps prior appropriation, but it puts on equal footing. And that is the issue that's now before the Nevada Supreme Court, is how they look at the public trust regarding prior appropriation. Does the public trust doctrine give it a super priority over the other water rights? That is a concern that we see, because that would have ramifications through all of the state of Nevada on the water rights. If you basically say now that through the public trust, this is a super priority date that supersedes on the Walker Lake, you're basically going to wipe out agriculture upstream of Walker Lake. Because there are many years you don't even have 127,000 acre feet flowing into Walker Lake on dry years. On normal years, it's very close. You also have the Walker Tribe, which is in between, and they are saying that they support water going into Walker Lake, but they also point out that they are a sovereign nation, and they are not subject to the public trust doctrine of Nevada. So they would still want to be taking their water. So its impact would be greater than 127,000 acre feet. I don't think anyone would argue that there's impacts to the Walker Lake. Walker Lake has lost quite a bit of capacity. The TDS, total dissolved solids, has increased even the time I've been here. When I first started back in 1998, the TDS at that time was under 10,000. It is now over 20,000. The fishery has died out in Walker Lake, and actually the whole ecosystem has changed out there because of this. And so I guess you understand there is a need there. In fact, there is what they call the NIFWIF program, a volunteer program to buy water rights to bring water back into Walker Lake. To date, they've bought over 100 CFS of water. They've also bought storage rights and other water rights to provide water back to Walker Lake. The concern, though, again, we see is, and I focus on the Carson, but if this is approved, what's the ramifications throughout the state of Nevada? What would preclude someone from coming to the Carson saying, with the public trust, we believe we need to have in-stream flows or other programs? What about the Pyramid Lake, the Truckee? If this program goes through, could it basically preclude any water being used to divert to the Newlands projects because of this? The other thing that's a real concern is that they're saying not just surface water, they apply it to all water rights, which include groundwater rights. Well, this is a super senior right. Most groundwater rights are junior to all surface rights, so they could be impacted. So does that mean that municipalities, domestic wells, all would be out of priority? I used to work in Colorado, and out there we had tributary groundwater rights and non-tributary groundwater rights. We don't have that in the state of Nevada. We would have to rewrite the Nevada water law just to start dealing with those issues. I don't think anyone would want to see domestic wells go dry because of this issue. What's the public impact, public trust act on that? So those are concerns that we see. There's no easy answer. There's a lot of issues for demand for water. I tend to tell my board, it's what are we trying to protect, the flower or the butterfly? They're both important, and it's a balancing act. But I think we have ways within Nevada water law today to try to alleviate some of these concerns, the ecological concerns in the area. But I'd rather go through the process we have in place today than to have a court and also in a public trust. And who knows then what they would come back. Is 127 enough? But in the future, they may say we want 150, 200,000. The impacts are huge, and there's a real concern. So based on that concern, CWSD is going to file the amicus brief opposing this use of the public trust. I'll get to the takings. If you read most of the documentations throughout the United States, and in the amicus brief that was given by professors who are supposed to be professionals on the takings, they do not consider this a takings. Most of the times, they don't consider it a taking because you still have your water right, you just don't get the water. And that's what happened in the Mona Lake situation. I would say our argument is that it's not the case. That if you have this public trust become a super senior water right, there are ranchers who will never be able to see their water. It is a takings. You will have groundwater users. They can't use their water rights. You cannot use it. It's a takings. It is a real concern that we see. And also, since you already have programs in place, like the NIFWIC program, buying water to be dedicated to the Walker Lake, you already know that there's programs in place to try to get there. If this became a situation where they could use the public trust, that whole program would be thrown out the window because there would not be a need to. So I really do argue that this is a takings. It's a different situation. And if it becomes a takings, who's going to end up paying for this? So that's a brief, non-legal opinion, just an opinion that I have and what I've read, and I'm interested in any comments you may have that I can bring back to my board.
Well, it's very informative, Mr. James. I guess my question would be, what are you asking from this board?
Well, more of anything, if you have concern, and I would actually think that you may want to provide your legal counsel to look at this carefully. You may want to even apply your own amicus brief. You may want to do something on your own, or you may want to join with other counties. But it's something that you should consider because, again, if this goes through, what's going to happen on the Truckee River? And if it impacts groundwater rights, what could it be impacting your other communities and other agencies and other programs you're working on? So, again, it's something that you should consider. We think it's important enough. You can either piggyback on ours or others, but there's something that you should probably, at a future board meeting, maybe bring up with your legal counsel how you may want to take any action if not. But I'm more interested if you have any just comments that I can bring back to my board, if you see a concern or not, so I can bring that forward.
Has the state water master taken a position in this case?
At this point, they have not. They may be neutral on it, but I think they are discussing this internally, and they are looking at it with some concerns.
I'm surprised they'd be neutral on it. Certainly they're going to have an impact based on the decision.
I would say so. It would change Nevada water law, but at this point what I've heard is that they have not taken an official position.
How about the federal water master?
They have not taken an official position on this.
Tumwa?
Don't know where Tumwa stands on this. I know that the counties, I deal mostly in our Carson watershed, that Lyon County is already participating. Carson Truckee Irrigation District is looking at filing an amicus brief. I am giving the same presentation to Churchill County tomorrow. I know that Douglas County is considering it, and I'm also giving the same communication to Carson City. They are still mulling over what they may or may not do.
Has anyone from your board had a sit down with the state water master or any of the others to solicit their opinion on the status?
Have not, and it's something that I probably should follow up on. I just had, in brief, informal conversations with them, but nothing official.
I see. Thank you.
Well, this isn't an action item, so anyway, it gives us something to think about. We can talk to staff and talk to our legal counsel and see if there's something that the county should be looking at.
I would like to bring it up at the NACO, next NACO meeting as well. What's going on there.
Yeah.
They make an inquiry, Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ed, have you guys, this is a cry out for a legislative solution or anything else. Have you guys pursued anything with the legislature?
Well, right now this is through the courts. And so I think this is where we're focused on the amicus brief and all that. Depending on what the ruling was coming out of the courts, I would think you would probably see something going back to the legislature at that time. Knowing how quickly courts move and everything else, I don't think it'll fall under this session. But I can guarantee you that if the courts did say the public trust is a supersedes and super priority date, I think you could see some real changes in requests in the 2021 session.
Anybody else have any questions for Ed? Thank you, Mr. James.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time to come up today. Appreciate it. No,
take public comment.
Okay. All right. So anyway, we can open that up for public comment on this discussion. And then we're not taking action. Anybody have any questions or comments they want to make? None? All right, we'll move along now to item number 17. Discussion of possible action, a presentation of a flood insurance assessments for Story Counties. The base information has been provided by FEMA to give an overview of the flood insurance coverage present in the county. This presentation is part of the information prepared by Story County through the Community Rating System, CRS, audit conducted by FEMA. Ms. Canfield.
Good morning. Kathy Canfield. We're heading towards the finish line of our FEMA audit, and this is one of the items that they asked us to present to our board. It's information about the NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, and this is the actual documentation of the policies that we have in Story County. We have 214 policies. Most of these are located in the Lockwood area, and I can, even though they don't give us individual policy information because of privacy issues, we can tell kind of by what zones and where those zones are located in the county for where these are. So we have 214 policies. Of those, that equates to just a little bit over $41 million in coverage if there was a catastrophic event for those policies. These are only the policies that are in place through the NFIP program. So anybody that is located in the special flood hazard area, which is a new word for floodplain, those areas, they're required to have, if they have any kind of federally assistance, like federally backed loans, they are required to have flood insurance. So these are those programs. The ones that are outside of the floodplain don't necessarily need to purchase it through this program, so those aren't included. So there might be some other places that do have some flood insurance wrapped up in their whole policies or of their businesses or such, but those wouldn't be included. This is just what's in the special flood hazard areas. So taking about an average of what people have, the average policies people are paying are about $485 a year, which equates to about $40 a month. So, and that's where we're at with the existing. There's some papers that were also included that are just reiterations of ways to look at the information, just sorted in different ways that are included with this for you to look over. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
So, so when someone buys a home in Lockwood, let's say, are they advised that they have to have flood insurance?
If they're in the flood hazard areas, now there are some homes that aren't, but there's a majority of them that are. Most of the time, their lenders are the ones that are telling them you need to have the flood insurance to qualify for the loans.
But if you bought with cash, then you don't need it.
No, right? No, you don't.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you don't have any kind of federal needs for that, you don't have to have it. So if after you look at this, if somebody has questions about it, I'm happy to answer. I should point out that
the FEMA person that I've been talking to about all this has been super helpful in trying to go over a lot of this with me to make sense of what's going on. So if I don't know the answer, I do have a really good contact. So
I'm pretty surprised that there's only 214 insurance policies in an area that has 800 homes.
Well, again, not the whole area is in the floodplain, but that's the numbers that they have. Now, the one thing is, it's not exactly comparing apples to apples because it's policies, it's not homes. So if a policy has, and again, there's, like, we've estimated that there's 378 buildings in the floodplain, but you could have one policy covering more than one building. You could have a policy if you owned, let's say you owned several of the buildings there, maybe you rent them out. You could have five or six homes under one policy. So it just, it's not quite a comparison exactly to each other.
Not everybody thinks about flood insurance until they see the Carolinas under 5 feet of water either.
Well, the Rainbow Bend is all, I figure that's all flood plain there.
A majority of, there's some pieces.
Lockwood, which is above, they're up high enough that whole Rainbow Bend development is basically in a bowl. It was used to be an alfalfa pasture, if I remember.
I think so.
There is one interesting paper that's on the very back of all this that says CRS and it says what if. And that talks about the credits or the discounts that people are getting because of the way how we implement the different ratings. And so right now, Story County is an 8. We're classified as an 8. And so that means that the people, and these numbers included, are getting a $51 rebate on average. If you go to a different... If you did more information and you got your scores higher, and you drop a number, which dropping is number one is the best, then these rates go up a little bit more, $75. If we were class 7, then the people would get a $75 discount on the plans per year. So this kind of shows what the differences are, outcome of what we do with the rating system.
Okay. We'll open up and see if there's any public comment regarding the flood insurance assessment, Story County.
May I chime in, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Right. I want to compliment and thank Kathy. This community rating system and the audit, at least from what Austin has shared with me, is a huge undertaking and a huge amount of very high-quality staff work. I don't think Kathy came in when she came to work for us ready to handle the county's flood program, especially to this extent. It wasn't even in our planning department, as I recall. So, Kathy, I want to compliment you. I know we've sent you all across probably the country for certifications and training, and you've just done a fabulous job. And this is, you know, we talked about needing improved on-ramps on I-80, which is in our jurisdiction. It's NDOT, so we talk to them every year about that. This is huge for 200 to 300 property owners in that community that we've talked about. So you've done a great job.
Oh, thank you. The other thing, too, by belonging to this program and by doing this, this also helps our community that if we ever did have some kind of disasters that have to do with flooding, and it maybe a flooding even happened that wasn't in the floodplain, but something happened, you know, we had a storm cloud that just stayed over something and just dumped and, you know, wiped out some things. Because we belong to this program, that makes us eligible for some disaster relief funds that if we didn't belong to this program, we wouldn't be eligible to tap into. So there are benefits for people outside that floodplain in emergency situations. It's not just the people that are living in that floodplain. They get a more direct benefit and more immediate benefit, but there are, if things happen outside of it, that the county gets to be eligible for.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for your comments. Sure. All right. Once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment regarding the flood insurance. Story County? Hearing none? Okay, we'll move right along now to item number 18. Discussion on possible action
Action on Bill number 102. First reading of ordinance number 18-293, an ordinance amending chapter 15.04, buildings and construction to adopt the 2018 international codes for building, residential, existing building, energy conservation, fuel, gas, mechanical, and the 2018 uniform codes for mechanical and plumbing, 2017 national electric code, 2018 international fire code, 2018 International Wildland Urban Code, 2018 International Fire Code. I already did that one, sorry. 2017 National Fires Protection Association Standards, NFPA, and the 2018 Northern Nevada Amendments and providing for properly related matters. Mr. Loomis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This ordinance is actually prepared by Robert Morris, special counsel of the county, in conjunction with Mr. Haynes. And so this is something we do periodically to adopt the new codes as they're developed by the Uniform or the International Code Commission. There is a body in Northern Nevada that recommends amendments to the Uniform Codes to comply or to work with the conditions that exist in Northern Nevada, and those are incorporated. Those changes are incorporated in the proposed ordinance. If there's specific questions about what's contained in the ordinance, I'm going to refer to Mr. Haynes.
Hi, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the board, Gary Haynes for the record, Community Development Department. We're on the same process and same schedule as the state, so the state has agreed that we'll skip every other code iteration. So now we are going from 2012 to 2018. This process began roughly in August of 17, so it's been a very long and tedious process. And I'm not sure if you'll remember, but in 2012, the way that this process unfolded was through the Northern Nevada International Code Council. There were two groups established. One was a steering committee composed of community development directors, building officials, and the like. The second group is the technical committee. The technical committee was composed of private and public partnerships, and they did the heavy lifting, to be real candid. They went through every code set and made amendments and changes to really meet our region geography. That's the crux of it. I've got a whole bunch of notes here, but I'm going to skip down to the bottom. After the first reading, this will go out for a 30-day public review period. So we're going to ask that this is heard again for second reading on October 16th. Then we'll, if it's approved, assuming that it hopefully will be approved, it'll be legally publicized from the 17th through the 31st, and then the ordinance will actually take place on, adoption of the ordinance will take place on November 1st. And then we would propose also a six-month period where companies could still submit under 2012 with amendments or 2018. And the purpose for that is a lot of these companies have been planning stages for the last year, 18 months, and they still haven't submitted. So we don't want to change them in midstream. There's two other keynote things I think here is one ties directly into Kathy's area for the National Flood Insurance Program. We will lose points if we don't have codes adopted within one code cycle. The second one is, and actually there's three. Second one is the Building Insurance Services Organization Community Rating Program. We're going through the same thing that Kathy is, but on the building side. And if we, again, do not have one code adoption iteration, then we'll lose points. With that, I could go on and on, but I think I'll just ask you if there's any questions. I can tell you just one more quick thing. In 2012, there were a lot of changes. As you may remember, the uniform fire codes and uniform building codes were changed to the international building codes in 2009. There were a lot of bugs when they did that. The 2012 code amendments, as you will probably remember, were very, very in-depth. The number one change in adoption in this whole code cycle is literally the addition of baby changing stations in male restrooms. That's the biggest thing that's changing from this code set adoption. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
My recollection in the past, we didn't always adopt every code because we found it to be problematic for some of our builders, and there was some concern. I can't. Maybe you
can enlighten me on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And the fire marshal can address that too. Primarily, that's been historically in the fire code sections, and that's residential fire sprinkler systems. Within the adoption of the wildland urban interface is where that lives, and we're proposing again that we do not adopt that section. I believe it's Chapter 9. The fire marshal will probably know that right at the top of his head, but Chapter 9 is not a chapter that we're proposing that you would consider to adopt.
Okay.
This has been sent out to every licensed contractor in Story County, and it's been also sent out via email to any design professional, which are all your generals, architects, so on, for inputs. And all of those companies have had input into the development of the amendments as well through the technical committees. They sat on many of those technical committees. And it's been vetted as well through Builders Association of Northern Nevada, and that was actually publicly heard by them in final draft form on July 19th. So I think we've done a lot of due diligence trying to reach out to say, is there anything that you're aware of that you have concerns or issues with?
And your office is comfortable with this?
We are comfortable with this.
Is there any questions for Gary?
No, I'm comfortable with it.
Do you have a follow-up with?
No. Okay. For that, I'd like to read in the title.
Okay, go ahead.
This is ordinance number 18-293. It's an ordinance amending Story County Code Chapter 15.04, Buildings and Construction, to adopt the 2018 International Codes for Building, Residential, Existing Building, Energy Conservation, Fuel Gas, Mechanical, the 2018 Uniform Codes for Mechanical and Plumbing, and the 2017 National Electric Code, the 2018 International Fire Code, the 2018 International Wildland Urban Interface Code, the 2017 National Fire Protection Association Standards, and the 2018 Northern Nevada Amendments amending Chapter 15.08.060, Appeal from Decisions and Providing for Other Matters Properly Relating Thereto.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. With that, how about if we go ahead and reopen it up for do you have a question first?
I had a question, and it was because you brought it up in your reading. So you said new and old have to abide, let's say, to any new standards as they're posted? Is that the way I'm understanding this?
If I'm following your question correctly, Mr. McGuffey, it's if I was to do a remodel or a substantial change to a residential or commercial building, yes, you would have to comply with the most current codes and amendments.
If you did a remodel, just a remodel section or the whole building?
It's substantial improvements is the way that the code's written. So if you're doing a remodel, adding a living room to a 2,000 square foot home, no.
Yeah, okay.
If you're doing, generally the rule is 50% or more.
Okay. But yeah, that's kind of what I was asking.
Did I answer that?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Great. All right, we'll open up for public comment. Any public comment regarding this item? Okay. Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve this item?
I'll make a motion to approve the first reading of ordinance number 18-293.
All right. Motion, a second.
You got a second.
Move to second to approve the first reading of ordinance 18-293. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Item number 19, we're going to recess as the Story County Board of Commissioners and convene as the 474 Fire Protection District Board. And with that, we're going to go ahead and recess for about 10 minutes.